Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This morning in a talk, I discussed topics leading on from a verse in Bhagavad Gita, Ichha Dvesha Samuttena Dvandva Mohena Bharata Sarva Bhutani Sammoham Sarge Yanti Parantapa. Everyone is born into this world being overcome by the dualities of desire and hatred. And in this way everyone remains bewildered in material existence. And I particularly discuss this verse with respect to the phenomenon of foolishness. We're in the world of foolishness. We're all foolish. So everyone does something foolish in their life. If there's anyone here who hasn't done anything foolish, please raise your hand. If you've never done anything stupid in your life, please raise your hand. And if you raise your hand, that is a sign of foolishness. Of great egoism. What's the first foolish thing we do? Everyone does in this world. We get born here. That's it. Just to be here means we're foolish. Because Krishna bhuli se jivanadi bahimuk ataiv maya tare shangshara duk. We, forgetting Krishna, we invite upon ourselves all misfortune. We become inimical to Krishna. And we invite all kinds of misery. So that's in itself foolish. So if we say everyone in this world is foolish, it's not so much an insult as a statement of fact. Now, why should we discuss so much about that? Well, Krishna himself does in Bhagavad Gita. A lot of Bhagavad Gita is discussing the material condition. In fact, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna discusses the material condition more than the spiritual condition. He discusses various attitudes and attachments in the modes of material nature. So this is meant to help us discriminate between what we should do and what we shouldn't do. Very simply, we can say that we should be Krishna conscious. We should turn our face toward Krishna. But then we find even as aspiring devotees, we're going ahead and looking back. Maybe there's something I didn't try out yet in this material world. So it's important to know what is the proper thing to do and what is not the proper thing to do, to become free from the foolishness that binds us in material existence. So further discussion of foolishness or stupidity or ignorance, there's so many terms that can be used. Now of course materialistic people also talk about stupidity, but their understanding of stupidity is something different. Their idea of intelligence is to very intelligently work within the material world in such a way that one can live comfortably within it and maybe dominate others, attain a superior position. But that's also foolish. To exercise one's intelligence to attain an apparently more favorable position of stupidity is not actual intelligence. But still, we can say that some things, even from the material point of view, are foolish. To act in a way that is against our own self-interest is foolish. But then if we don't know what is our self-interest, that's the first foolishness. But even a classic example is sitting on the branch of a tree, sawing off the tree branch in such a way that not only will the tree branch fall down, but you will fall down with it. So that's a classic example of foolishness. That you think, well, I'm going to cut the tree branch, then I'll have some firewood. But you don't consider that I myself am going to suffer injury from doing so. You know, material stupidity, spiritual stupidity, from the spiritual point of view, everything is, everything that is not done in Krishna consciousness is foolishness. Ritertam yat pratiyeta, napratiyeta chatmani. Yatha bhasho yatha tama. Tadvidyadatmano mayam. Krishna says that, he tells Brahma that you should know that everything in the whole of existence that is conceived of without relationship to Krishna is foolishness. So that's the whole of material existence. Now we may have heard, don't be judgmental, right? To call someone stupid, that's being judgmental. But we're required to make such judgments. Otherwise, if we join foolish people in being foolish because we don't want to be unkind to them, that's also foolish. And we should correct. Just like children naturally act foolishly, but then they have to be trained. And if we say, well, don't judge them, don't try, then that's another kind of foolishness. And even actually, if we say, don't be judgmental, that in itself is being judgmental. So, there are differences. If we say, don't be judgmental, whatever anyone does, it's all right, it's okay. It's not. That's another kind of foolishness. You say, don't be judgmental. Yes, we will be judgmental. For the better good. Otherwise, if you say don't be judgmental, there's no difference between good and bad, better or worse, intelligent and unintelligent. Foolishness, in every language, there's words for foolishness. In your language, there must be. May much of the humor in the world is based on real or imagined foolishness. In fact, some of the funniest things you can find are things that people actually do, not theoretical situations. But when Krishna speaks about foolishness, as in this verse of Bhagavad Gita that I quoted, it's not funny. You may think that, well, now we're going to talk about foolishness, so it's going to be a joke show. It's not a joke. It's very serious. Foolishness can cause so much, and does cause so much pain. In fact, in one sense, we could say that all the suffering in the world is due to foolishness. There we go. Krishna bhuli seji vanadi bahimuk atev maya tari deya shangshar duk. Why are we suffering in material existence? Well, the Buddha, analyzing material existence, said that it's causing to suffering. He analyzed the whole of material existence. Of course, he wouldn't use the term material existence. But he says it's all according to desire. But he doesn't see that the root of desire is to love Krishna. And it's misplaced desire that causes all suffering. So his idea was just to stop all desire. But that's another impossibility. It's just like saying, don't be judgmental. You're immediately back in the same situation that you're speaking against. You're being judgmental. So the same thing, we have to stop all desire. Then how can you stop all desire? Then you have to desire to stop desire. And then we're again in an impossibility. So Vaishnava understanding is more realistic, that we should know what is healthy desire. What is nourishing? Which kind of desire will bring us out of suffering and into bliss? And that desire is the desire to serve Krishna. So the foolishness that Krishna talks about, it's nothing really to laugh about. Sometimes we may laugh, but actually it's dangerous. The foolishness of forgetting Krishna. And it's something we have to avoid. There was actually a book written in 1932, A Short Introduction to the History of Stupidity. And analyzing how so many people do so many stupid things. But then, Short History of Stupidity, Krishna actually spoke 5,000 years ago. It's called the Bhagavad Gita. Yeah. Krishna, first of all, admonished Arjuna for being so foolish. Kutastva kashma lamedam vishame samupastita manarya jushta masvagya akirti karamajava klaibhyang masmakamapata naitat tvayupapadyate. Krishna told Arjuna that you're just like a eunuch. He insulted Arjuna. Well, it would be an insult if they weren't friends. You're not speaking properly. This is crazy. And then he told him that you're speaking as if you know a lot, but you don't. You think you know a lot, but you don't. So this one verse from several verses from Bhagavad Gita, they could substitute for a history of stupidity, just like this one. Icha dvesha samuttena dvandva mohena bharata sarva bhutani samaham sarga yanti parantapa. We're all born into foolishness. The whole condition of material existence is foolishness. So Krishna spoke to Arjuna to rescue him from his foolishness. And we can take advantage of Bhagavad Gita to become rescued from foolishness. Now, one major factor why we are in foolishness, and one major factor why it is so very difficult to preach Krishna consciousness in this world, is that people are willingly foolish. They don't want to understand. If we tell them that we'll give you an understanding whereby you can be freed from all suffering, they don't believe it. And the idea that we give for being free of suffering, it doesn't seem to them to be to be realistic, because their idea of being happy is to enjoy the senses in material existence. But that in itself is the cause of their suffering. There's a story in this regard of a river. On one side, people live very happily. On the other side, people live very miserably. On the miserable side, people's main activity was walking around carrying big heavy bags of rocks on their backs, which bent them down. It was very difficult. But in their estimation, whoever can carry the most rocks is the most prestigious. So this was their whole culture, rock carrying, which was very difficult. But sometimes they'd see the people on the other side, the people on the other side would say, "Hey, why don't you come and join us? Why do you want to suffer carrying these rocks?" So they'd ask, "All right, we can come and join you, but we can walk over the river, but not carrying these rocks. We'll get carried." "Then throw away your rocks. Then you can come." "Throw away the rocks? What a crazy idea." And then the mothers will admonish their children, don't go to the edge of the river. There are people, very dangerous people. They'll tell you to throw away your rocks. So the rocks are our material attachments. And the rocks are all the paraphernalia we collect for sense enjoyment. So if we have big house, big car, lots of money, and we think, oh yeah, I must be enjoying. If I don't have this, how can I enjoy? So if we tell people how they can get free of their stupidity, they think the formula that we give in their estimation is stupid. So it's a different understanding of what is stupid. Get rid of the rocks. What a crazy people. Another thing is, if we point out that the whole civilization since time immemorial is simply based on foolishness, people may become angry, or they may not want to admit that my whole life has been one of foolishness. Not only one life, but life after life, simply foolishness. They may not want to admit it. The egoism is so strong. Just like if we call a fool, he becomes angry. Actually, to call someone a fool, that's maybe the worst instance. If we say someone, you're fat, overweight, or underweight, there are so many ways you can criticize people. You're cruel. If we tell someone, well, if I can think of one word that best describes you, it's a fool. And people, they don't want to hear it at all. But that's a fact. So it's difficult to wake people up, or even wake ourselves up, to the fact that we are very foolish. We're suffering a material existence. We don't want to admit it. Now, if we consider it, ignorance is always going to be more than knowledge. We can say, even from a material point of view, an intelligent person is someone who has some idea about how much he doesn't know. If someone has a lot of knowledge, we think he's very learned and very intelligent. But a wise person, we can say, is someone who understands how much more he doesn't know. The non-knowledge is more than knowledge. Just like someone may be an expert in some field. In science today, there's so much specialization. Just like in engineering, there are so many different branches of engineering. And we can't expect an engineer who studied how to build bridges to be expert in another sphere of engineering, such as how to build submarines. It's a different branch. And what to speak, another branch of science altogether that study of genetic modulation, what's the word? Manipulation. It's another field altogether. And so someone may be expert in one field, but there's very little knowledge of another field, because human intelligence is limited. So someone may be very expert in one field and ignorant of so many other fields. It may be, ignorant. We're all ignorant of so many things. Just like, for instance, hardly anyone outside of Croatia has ever heard of Darovar. And maybe a lot of people even in Croatia never heard of it. I don't know. Is there any name and fame of Darovar?
Because of registration plates. Car registration plates.
DR.
The cheapest.
So people come and get registered here, is it? That's claim to fame. But anyway, you get the point, that ignorance is much more than knowledge. It has to be. That's just the just the very nature of this world. There will always be more things that we don't know than we do know. Because we're not God. He knows everything. Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjana pavishani jabhutani. Krishna knows everything, past and present. But we can only know very few things, and even what we do know, it may not actually be correct, even materially speaking. Just like a great scientist of 200 years ago didn't know, if we take the great scientists of 200 years ago, they were ignorant of so many factors of what is considered knowledge in modern science. And if we go another 200 years in the future, no doubt there'll be many things that scientists know that they don't know now. So ignorance is always vast. Knowledge, just we can get a few specific details. What is the capital of Croatia? What is the population of Croatia? We can give some vague knowledge we can give, but it's specific. We have to, if we say what is the capital of Croatia, it has to be Zagreb. It can't be Darovar or Osijek or Rijeka. It has to be specific. But non-knowledge or the possibilities of that which is not true, they're infinite and vast. We can say Zagreb is the capital of Croatia, then Darovar is not, Rijeka is not, Belgrade is not, Brussels is not. They won't teach you that in the school. Ignorance is everywhere. The whole material existence. Simply ignorance. Even Brahma, the greatest. If there's anyone in the universe who knows everything, it's Brahma. But even his knowledge is limited, because that's the very nature of material existence, is everything is limited. There's a limit to how much we can know, but there's no limit to the knowable. Fortunately, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks about Yomam eva samudho janati purushottamam sa sarvavid bhajatimam sarva bhavena bharata. One who knows without doubting, Krishna says, that I, Krishna, am the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such a person knows everything, and therefore he worships me in all respects. Knows everything means what? He doesn't know every little detail, but he knows everything that needs to be known. Gyan, that's said in Bhagavad Gita, that word comes up. Gyan, that which we need to know. Gyan is knowledge, and gyan means that which we need to know. We don't need to know. There are so many factors that we don't need to know. The average person living in India doesn't need to know that Zagreb is the capital of Croatia. Doesn't need to know it. It's if he might know it, we could say that's gyan, knowledge, but he doesn't need to know it. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna speaks about gyanam and gyayam, knowledge and that which it requires to be known. So there's no use to be proud if we know so many things. Become very proud. I know so many things. But there's knowledge and there's wisdom. Wisdom comes from knowing that I don't know. So many things I don't know. So many things I can't know. That I'm very limited. I'm very small. And even if I am very intelligent compared to others, it doesn't really help us. Unless we know what we really need to know, which is who I am, why am I suffering a material existence, how can I get free from that? And then how can I, is there some way I can help others to be free also? So that knowledge Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita. So there's no use to become proud if we're very intelligent and this and that. In this country, I don't think it's a big thing, but definitely in the English-speaking world, among a certain class of people, the kind of people that read the New York Times and the Washington Post and the London Times and the Daily Telegraph, and they say intelligence is highly lauded. Definitely in India, it's a big thing that if you're very learned and you have a degree from a prestigious college, it's considered very good. But there's no use to be puffed up. Self-confidence, yeah? Self-confidence, but that should be based on not thinking that I'm independently powerful, independently intelligent, but... Well, just like to give this talk, I have to have some kind of self-confidence. If I was sweating, and I'm sweating, but not out of fear of what's everyone going to think of me, but confident because I know that Krishna's message should be spoken. I'm fortunate to have the opportunity to be able to speak that. So, self-confidence can be there, but not egoism and thinking, I'm so great, I know so much more. By my intelligence, I will manipulate others and manipulate the situation. To be very confident of oneself and to be stupid at the same time, it's a very bad combination because very confidently lead people in the wrong direction and advise them to do wrong things. I'll get back to that a little later. Who can be free of doubt? Krishna spoke to Arjuna so that he could be free of doubt. Asang shayang samagrang mang yata gyasasi tachrino. Krishna, after speaking in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, in a general way about how we are eternal, we're not the body, about how we shouldn't be attached to, we should perform our duty in this world but not be attached to the results, how we should not be attached to any kind of duality such as heat and cold, honor and dishonor, we should just do our duty, various kinds of yoga. And then Krishna starts to begin his teachings on Bhakti Yoga, and he starts that off by saying, at the beginning of the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that Maya Sakta Manav Partha Yogam Yunjan Madashraya Asangshayang Samagrang Mang Yatagyasasi Tach Trinu. Krishna says that with your mind attached to me, Maya Sakta Manav Partha Yogam Yunjan, taking shelter in me, in yoga, which he's just established, Bhakti Yoga is the highest yoga. You hear from me in such a way, I'll speak to you topics in such a way that you can be free from all doubt. Arjuna was in great doubt as to his duty. Krishna spoke in such a way to free him from all doubt. Then the next verse, Krishna spoke, Jnanam teham savijnanam idam vakshyam yasheshataha yajgatva neha bhuyo nyajgatavyam avasheshate. Krishna said, I will now speak to you, I will give you that knowledge and that practical knowledge. Jnanam te, I'll now tell you everything you need to know so that you won't need to know anything else. It's a great promise. You won't need to know anything else. So, understanding Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's instructions, that should free us from all doubt. Now, there may be others who are free from doubt, just like we see Srila Prabhupada, he was free from any doubt. But there may be other people who are free from doubt, but they're not situated in proper knowledge. It's a very dangerous combination. For instance, in the late 1990s, it became very famous, Jim Jones, a Christian come communist leader of a commune, who was so sure that he had that everyone has to now take all his followers had to take some cyanide, and then we'll all go to God. And they all did, almost 900 people. He was sure, and they were all sure. Maybe you've met some Christian preachers, they're all sure that, yes, the world's going to end in, how many days is it now? It's always, what is it, what's the latest?
Soon.
It's always. They gave up with all that? They got fed up.
Precise dates. With precise dates.
They gave up with precise dates. It just became soon. It's been going on for 2,000 years. It, just now, you see, they study the Bible and say, this means this and this means that. And yeah, it's just 5 years from now. And they're waiting and waiting and then waiting, the day comes, the day goes, the next day comes, people get up and yawn, nothing happens. But they're convinced the world is going to end. There's going to be a massive change. The age of Aquarius is coming. On such and such a date, there were some flying saucers will land and living beings will come out and solve all the problems. And everything will become wonderful. So you'll find people, they're very convinced. But they're fools. But they can convince others also. So therefore, we should know. We should neither be completely agnostic in the sense that, well, we don't know, so many people say so many things, and who knows what's right. Someone knows, Krishna knows, God knows. So we should be careful to be free from, one thing is the foolishness of believing something which is not true. And the other kind of foolishness is thinking that, well, no one can know. So there's no use to try and know. And therefore, just live our lives and eat, sleep, drink, be merry and enjoy, for tomorrow we shall all be dead. But then comes the question, what happens after death? And then we should try to find out. So really, human life is meant for trying to know atato brahma jignasa. In the human form of life, we should really try to know that which is possible to know in human life, which is not possible in animal life. Otherwise, we remain as foolish as animals. And then we become an animal again. And then we suffer birth, death, old age and disease again and again and again. So really, human life is meant for becoming intelligent, exercising the God-given intelligence. So in one sense, echoing Oscar Wilde, we can say the only sin is stupidity. And Krishna, he says something similar to that also. Apichet sudaracharo bhajate mamananyabhak sadhur eva samantavya. That if someone's on the proper path, even if they appear to be sinful, they should be considered to be samyagvya vasito hisaha. They should be considered to be properly situated. If someone's going in the right way, they are properly situated. So they may appear to be foolish, but they're doing the right thing. And there are many, many materialistic people have analyzed stupidity in various ways, but still to find sanity is very rare. And we might think, well, the great leaders of society, they make plans in Brussels, they're making plans how to organize the society, and great professors in the universities, and people come on TV, tell us so many things, telling me more and more about some useless information, and go on like that. Unfortunately, many of the people who we accept as our leaders, they are blind leading the blind, active fools. That example is there, that more dangerous than just a passive fool, someone who just sits at home and is, or he sits on the tree and is sawing the tree branch, so he's going to fall down, he's going to damage himself. But then someone who takes, who's actively foolish and acts as a leader, acts as if he knows, but he doesn't know, he's more dangerous, just like that example of the Jim Jones, who said, now you all drink this potassium cyanide solution, and we'll all go to heaven. And who knows where they went? Not to heaven, that's for sure. Who's heard of Harry Truman? Anyone? History buffs? Ex-president of the United States. In 1945, he spoke of, now we're going to enact such policies that there'll be an end to all war. Foolish statement, huh? And now we're going to make policies, there'll be an end to all war. And the United States of America has been at war practically non-stop ever since. If there aren't any wars, they make them. No wars to go. Okay, let's go and make a war over there. Those poor people, they haven't had a war for a long time. It's just like they don't have any problems. Someone comes along and says, I'll solve your problem for you. And then they make a problem and say, now we've got the solution. So what you need is a few American bombs. And then you have a problem here. Don't worry, we're here to help you. But again, you can. It's the whole history of humankind is people with full conviction. Yeah, we have to do this. We have to do this. Great leaders. And people become swept in the illusory energy of thinking, yes, this great leader will lead us to the great prosperity, everything will be wonderful. You've all seen these film footage of Adolf Hitler attending rallies with huge crowds of people, and they're all super enthusiastic, Heil Hitler, and with full faith and confidence that Hitler, he's the man to lead us. And everything's going to be wonderful under Hitler. And it seemed like that for some time, at least from the German point of view, not from the Jewish point of view, for sure. But Hitler, he wasn't so smart after all. He made foolish decisions. For instance, invading Russia. In hindsight, you can say it was a foolish decision, but it seemed to him to be very good. And even after he attacked Russia, he reached the gates of Moscow and thought, okay, we'll leave Moscow and come back later. But he never came. They never came back. Huge numbers. They instead got snarled up in Stalingrad. And that was the beginning of the end. And he made wrong decisions, but he thought he was invincible. He was empowered by the illusory energy to inspire people to follow him with great confidence. But he was another fool. Unfortunately, people, even the, in some way, you see, that's a good example, isn't it? Because the German people were considered very intelligent. And in many ways, they were very intelligent. But it was to misuse our intelligence is another kind of foolishness. And that was a very unfortunate misuse of foolishness. But it goes on, doesn't it? It's not. In retrospect, we may say, well, America was in Vietnam. What were they doing there? Killing so many people and getting so many people killed. What was the value? What was the benefit? When the American troops first invaded Iraq, anyone in America who spoke against that was considered anti-American. And now most of the country thinks, what were we doing there? What was the value? What good did it do? But at the time, people were saying, yeah, follow our great leader. So it's really a case of the blind leading the blind. But that's there in the whole of society, the whole idea that let's develop the economy and then make plans whereby we can all be happy in material. But they don't even say that, how you'll be happy. They just say, we'll develop the economy and make rules so that everyone can do all kinds of things which previously would have been considered very sinful, and that's good. So they have their idea what's good, and they want to impose that on others. But it's the blind leading the blind. Antha yathandaya rupa niyamanas, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam. The blind leading the blind, and then they fall in a ditch. And so we can say that the people who might seem to be the most intelligent, they're actually the most foolish. Oh, what was that? A war to end all wars. That was it. A war to end all wars. But okay, folks. Okay, all you young men, put down your farming tools. You students, put down your books, pick up a gun. But don't worry. It's a great cause, because if we're going to go and win this war, and this war will end all wars. People think, great, we're going to end all wars. There's no ending wars. It'll go on. Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. But that's your own foolishness, but then you bring a whole bunch of other people with you and tread on other people's heads. So then you may say, well, why does God allow this? Why does he allow it? He allows us. He gives us a little independence, which we can use or misuse. To properly use our independence, that is sanity. To misuse it is insanity. But then we have to have the humility, first of all, to find out, to inquire, what does God want of us? What does he want us to do? But we'd put it around the other way. We think that God, we want this, so God must want it for it. Then he should help us to get it. Right? That's his job. God's job is to help us do what we want. So it's a wrong attitude. It's a wrong attitude. We should find out what he wants. And then we become like spoiled children. We only expect the parent will just let us do what we like and help us to do what we like. But rather we should find out what he wants and what will be good for us. So that means actually to inquire in humility, try to understand. Otherwise, if we take what is not actually for our benefit to be beneficial, then stupidity, foolishness. And in Kali Yuga, it's endemic. One of the symptoms of Kali Yuga, predicted in Kali Yuga, Panditye Chapalang Vachaha. If people can speak all kinds of rubbish, people think, oh, very intelligent. They speak all kinds of things which no one can understand. You think, oh, very intelligent. Suhotra Swami used to talk about verbal dysentery and intellectual constipation. Just non-stop talking, but any proper functioning of the brain got stopped up long ago. There's a saying in Sanskritam which Sanatana Goswami quotes in his commentary on his own book, Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Paropadeshe panditiam sarvesham sukaram nirnam. That it's easy to make yourself sound like an expert when you're advising others. If you come along and say, well, everybody, I have to advise you, sound very calm, I have to advise you, yeah, that we have no other option at the present time but to do this, 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 this. Oh, yeah, okay. So very self-assured, but we don't know how we should properly utilize our intelligence. Kartaham iti manyate. We think, yes, I'm the doer. I know. Don't worry, I'm in control here. But we see, I've just given a few examples, how seemingly intelligent people do stupid things with terrible consequences. So what do we do? What do we do? What's real intelligence? Real intelligence should be to sit down quietly and think, what's my position? What's my position? I've got someone saying this, someone saying that, someone saying something else, someone saying something else. What do I do? What do you do? How do I find out what is really in my self-interest? And then we should seek that knowledge, or we should seek that guidance by which we can actually know what is beneficial for us. Vyamashrayana vakena buddhi mohya siva me. That Krishna says, I can't understand. Arjuna says to Krishna, I can't understand what you're saying, but you just speak clearly to me, that so that what's actually beneficial for me. You just tell me that. Tadekameva nischitya shreyo yat shreyo hum apniyam. Krishna, Arjuna says to Krishna, you just tell me clearly what will be beneficial for me. We may not get such clear guidance. But we should, what do we have to do? Then we have to pray. Pray to God, pray to Krishna. Please give me that guidance by which I can become free from all illusion. It becomes more and more difficult in the modern age due to the education and the illusion that's spread by education. People think they know a lot, and then with the internet age you can find out anything you need to know. Just look at it, type in a few words, you got it. Okay, now you know. Knowledge at your fingertips. And what's the purpose of life? You can look it up. The only problem is that there's so many people saying so many things. So simply filling our heads with information is not a substitute for a cool-headed detached trying to understand. But then that also won't help. Cool-headed, where's the cool head? In the internet age, where's the trying to understand? What do we need to understand? So many people, that's already been done by others. We may think, but it's really our duty in human life to try to find out what is our actual shreya, what is actually for our benefit. We should not confuse high education with actual intelligence. They're not necessarily the same thing. Srila Prabhupada often used to point out that even very simple and people in India, their level of spiritual understanding is generally far higher than that of highly educated people in the Western world. And he often gave the example, Srila Prabhupada often gave the example of a professor who he met in Moscow who was fully convinced that when we die, everything is finished. And Prabhupada was really, he was surprised at the foolishness of this. He often used to quote this, that even a highly educated person is convinced that when the body is finished, everything is finished, whereas an uneducated person in India, without any special education, without any formal education, they know that I'm in my present situation due to my previous activities. I take birth after birth after birth. And if I happen to come across such a person as Srila Prabhupada, I should hear from him and respect him. Unlike the professor who was cordial with him but wasn't interested in learning from him. So in that way, that culture, that spirit, living in a spiritual culture automatically helps to make us spiritually intelligent. But that can be misused also. And we see in India there's so many bogus teachers, completely bogus. And how can they get away with it? Because the culture of trying to understand, applying one's intelligence is not there. It's just blind following. You all right? You all going some more? Too much for you all? 1 hour of discussion of stupidity. It's an important topic. It's not entertaining per se. So with the difference between education and intelligence, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he warned us to avoid vain empirical wranglings. Vain in this sense means put forward with a lot of pride, as if an egoism. Empirical means there's a whole attitude there of thinking that, yes, I can understand everything by my own efforts. And wranglings means gives the idea of trying to show oneself to be more intelligent than others. The vain empirical wranglings, which he called false and full of specious verbosity. Bhaktisiddhanta's language. You don't understand what that means. Specious verbosity. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's language. Specious means it may sound to be true. It sounds very sophisticated and very true, but it's not. There's serious logical problems with it. And verbosity means verbal diarrhea. Just talking too much. Or talking in a highly inflated way, as if you've really, you get these kind of people, they talk in a way that sounds very intellectual, and they can go on talking for, they'll go on and on and on talking, even not noticing that no one's listening to them. There's nothing they actually say. They use lots of big words. They're going, well, considering the... Blah, 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 and they just go on and on. But then nothing actually they say. Just going on and on and on talking. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he warned us against that. Even in devotional service, we should not be stupid, but we shouldn't also be artificially intellectual and try. We can be enamored by the knowledge and intellectualism. That's another kind of device of Maya. One thing is to talk about being free from Maya, and another thing is to be free from Maya. It's not necessarily the same thing. It's good to talk about how to get free from Maya, but we shouldn't think that because we can intellectually analyze, this is Maya, this is Krishna. Ritayatam yad pratiyeta na pratiyeta chatmani yad vidyad atman yad vidyad atmano mayam yatha bhasho yatha tamaha. Krishna says that Maya or illusion is anything that is conceived of without relation to me. It's like a reflection in the darkness, but it's not actual knowledge. So we can, taking Krishna's statements, we can analyze that. But at the same time, we always have to be very careful and understand that simply by intellectual application, even by following so many rules and regulations of devotions, we can do everything that we're supposed to do. And still, that doesn't necessarily mean we're going to be free from Maya. We might, there can be some little admixture of Mayavad or some admixture of egoism. Daivi hiesha gunamai mama maya duratyaya. It's very difficult to get free from maya. So we shouldn't take it as a very light thing that we can be freed from the stupidity that we have been accustomed to life after life after life. So what's the solution? Then we have to hear. We have to go on hearing the message, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Don't hear our mind, our own mind. Very dangerous to listen to our own mind. And even more dangerous to listen to the dictation of our senses. Go on hearing and chanting about Krishna based on Shastra. There may be very many enlivening speakers. We have to see what is their behavior also. Acharya means who should act properly as well as teach properly. It's exactly to get on the right path. We really have to pray to Krishna to get properly situated, because there's so many things that can go wrong, and if we go wrong, we miss the point. Just like we were discussing this going to the moon. if we take it that the moon's 238,000 miles away from the Earth, and we shoot a firework from Cape Canaveral. Cape Kennedy, we shoot an oversized firework, and then somehow it's supposed to reach there. But if it's 0.001 of a degree off, then it's going to miss. It's just a little point a long way away. So in the same way, if we're not just exactly on the path of Krishna consciousness, then we're going to miss it. So of course we can talk about adjusting as we go along. You have to be very careful to adjust. Something like skiing, you're going down a ski slope very fast, and you just have to adjust all the time. You have to be completely focused, otherwise you're going to end up with broken bones. There's a saying about stupidity. What is that? Stupidity means to repeat the same mistake again and again and again. Well, there we go. That's life in the material world. We repeat the same mistake. We should learn from our mistakes. But better is to learn from Shastra. Because we don't learn from our mistakes. We're so foolish that we don't learn from our mistakes. We made a mistake to get born, and then we got born again and again and again. So learn from those who know properly. Come to the conclusion of Krishna consciousness and go on that path. Use our intelligence. At the same time, proper use of our intelligence is to understand the limits of our intelligence. Surrender to Krishna. We should surrender with our intelligence, but we should not surrender our intelligence. That means we shouldn't give up. We should intelligently try to understand what is the right path. At the at the same time understanding that with my intelligence I can't understand everything. So on one hand we're enjoined to use our intelligence, at the same time we should be intelligent enough to understand that I can't understand everything. So I have to take shelter of honest people. Honest people are those who recognize their own limitations, that we are dependent on the highest intelligence, who is Krishna. So as long as we know that we're foolish, then we're making a good start. But we should know that there is a state beyond foolishness. Krishna says this. I started with this talk with Icha Dvesha Samutena. We are all born in this material existence due to desire and hatred. So then the question comes, how to go beyond that? And that Krishna gives the formula: Sarvadhaman Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Vraja Aham Tva Sarva Papebhyo Moksha Yishami Masvaja. Surrender to Krishna, Krishna looks after us. Hare Krishna. Any question about this, please? Yeah.
Maharaj, is it possible for a person to be inspiring and enlivening speaker or preacher in Krishna consciousness if he doesn't live a lifestyle?
Is it possible to be an inspiring teacher and preacher in Krishna consciousness if he doesn't live it properly? Well, it's possible to be an inspiring teacher and preacher and completely mislead people with no touch of Krishna consciousness. So it's possible in Krishna consciousness also that someone might be inspiring, but you can't really inspire people for the right thing unless you follow it yourself. The thing is that Krishna consciousness, as Srila Prabhupada gave it and as all the bona fide acharyas give it, it's not just coming from an individual who speaks in an inspiring way, but it's backed up by a whole body of shastra and tradition. So if we're going to present Krishna consciousness, then we're going to have to present, this is what we are presenting. And if we show what we are presenting, then we ourselves, the preacher and teacher should be a model of that. Otherwise it becomes hypocritical. So it's a very good check and balance system. But there is the possibility of people being a member of an organization which is supposed to be propagating Krishna consciousness, such as the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, who are inspiring teachers, but they don't talk anything about Krishna. And that's become quite a phenomenon in the last few years, that people have got this tremendous knowledge from Srila Prabhupada, but they talk about things which have got nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. But then what's the point? They inspire people, but not for Krishna consciousness, or only in a very roundabout way. So yeah, it's possible to be inspiring and inspire people, but just miss the point altogether. So what is the point? You were going to say? Yeah.
I have a question. In our eternal spiritual position, we are eternal, full of spiritual knowledge.
Yeah, by constitution, we are Satchidananda, eternal, full of knowledge and bliss.
So my question is, what kind of knowledge is it? What do they know that we don't know? Even Nanda, Baba and Yashoda, they don't know that Krishna is God. And
What do the fully perfect people know that we don't know? And you're giving the example of the Vrajavasis. Well, the residents of Vrindavan, headed by Nanda and Yashoda, they're also in one sense in ignorance. But that ignorance is the ignorance of love. That they're so much in love with Krishna that they can't even see that he's God. Whereas ours is the ignorance of hate, Icha Dvesha, desire and hate. Dvesha means hate.
It can also mean envy?
Actually, in the most of the interpreters will say here, it's attachment and aversion. Desire, I want this, I don't want that. I want to embrace a young, beautiful woman, I don't want to embrace an old, ugly woman, like this. But with desire comes hate. I am a great Croatian patriot, and the symptom of that is I hate Serbians. You're laughing now, but if I'd have said that, 25 years ago? You'd get big cheers, isn't it?
Still you can get in some
Still you'll get in some places, yeah. You remember, huh? He can remember. Maybe you were also at that time. Now,
he's from Vukovar.
That's the border area?
That's the city which was completely smashed on the Danau River.
Uh-huh.
It's interesting that he's from Serbian actually. So he was fighting for, he was in the city, he was fighting when the city was in,
under siege.
Under siege. And then he was for, I don't know how many months he was in prison in Serbia. They, very heavy. They beat that guy. Very heavy experience.
Then anything else?
If we are not the doers, how we can do stupid things?
Yeah. If we're not the doers, how can we can? We're not the doer. This we've learned from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, text 27. What is that verse? Ahankara iti amme. How does that go? Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani savas ahankara iti amme binna. No, I'm getting me. Ahankara vimurha ma katahim iti manyate. That the foolish person thinks I am the doer when things are done by the three modes of material nature. But then later in Gita, Krishna says, adhishtanam tata karta, the five factors of action. One of them is the doer. So, in one sense we are the doer, but to think I am the only doer, I am the independent doer, that is foolishness. And among the five factors, the most important is daivam, the hand of God. In fact, if we see that purport, what Srila Prabhupada writes there, let's have a look. Adhishtanam. I'll just look there. It's a very interesting statement in this regard. Oh, that word adhishtanam comes up several times. Okay, reading from this purport, this verse in the 18th chapter. Adhishtanam tata karta, karta means the doer, karanam cha pritak vidham, vividhas cha pritak cheshta, daivam chaivatra panchamam. The place of action, the performer, that's the doer, the various senses, the many different kinds of endeavor, and ultimately the super soul, these are the five factors of action. Purport. The word adhishtanam refers to the body. Now listen to this very carefully. We're not the doer, right? Listen to what Prabhupada writes here. The soul within the body is acting to bring about the results of activity and is therefore known as karta, the doer. That the soul is the knower and the doer is stated in the Shruti. Esha hi drashta srashta. So we are the doers. But to think I am the only, the whole and soul doer, That is egoism. So everything has to be understood very carefully. Hare Krishna.